Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500 from Wondery. Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I am okay. There's been some stuff come up in the news lately. A story about a 77-year-old man, Albert Flick.
It's been said for a long time that when a serial killer stops killing, it's because they're either dead or they've grown old or they're in prison.
Yeah.
I may have been in that category that think when you get into your late 70s, early 80s, I mean, you might still be that killer inside, but you really can't do much with it.
Yeah, I hear about them paroling people that are at the end of their life all the time because it's cruel and unusual to keep somebody that's got health issues, what have you, institutionalized behind bars. For the most part, I typically agree with that. I said, what threat are they to society? And then we have Albert Flick.
Yeah, so the next time some elderly woman or gentleman is, you know, in prison and has served 40 years or whatever it is, and they're campaigning to get out, well, thanks to Albert Flick, I think there might be just a different point of view now, which is they're never too old to kill.
Yeah. How many people had this guy killed? Like three?
He's killed at least two. He killed his wife many, many years ago after she served him with divorce papers. Then now, in 2018, he followed a woman from a laundromat and murdered her.
This is after he'd been released.
Yes, he had served time in prison and was murdered again.
Yeah, he was released because he was deemed, as the headlines put it, too old to be violent. And here we are. He has stabbed a woman to death. And if you look at the guy, I mean, you wouldn't think he's that threatening. You wouldn't see him as a threat walking down the street.
The other thing that should be said, though, in this case, and we've had many people requesting that we cover it, he had attacked people around 2007. He stabbed a woman with a fork, and he hit another woman with the butt of his knife.
I get it. That was 10 years ago-ish, but wow. It's sad because I think there are people, elderly people, senior citizens in prison that it's more humane to give them relief, but somebody like him comes along and it just ruins it for everybody.
Don't underestimate anyone. And if you think back, Ted Bundy made use of that. Oh, I'm crippled. Help me. I'm dropping things. You know, he wouldn't have to say it. He would show it and people would come over to help him. This guy, straight up psychopath. I mean, he followed that woman out and just stabbed her, well, I think 11 times or something. And he had stabbed his wife 14 times back in the day.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tonight's case is a daughter who is murdered, a family that's torn apart, and forgiveness and understanding that overshadows all of it. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about a case out of Chatham, Ontario. It's the case of Mason Jenkins. The parents, Brian Jenkins and Leslie English, got married in 1974. They had two kids. Mason was born in 1978 and Jennifer was born in 1980. Now, the parents were middle class. They bought their home in Chatham sometime in the early 80s. They had a normal life for their kids, they said. Leslie worked as a mental health worker, and Brian worked in sales. Jennifer was described as bubbly, and she was just, I guess, really popular, had a lot of friends. She was very mature for her age, very easygoing. Despite all this, she seemed to have a very tight-knit circle of friends. Janny J, as she was known, she and her brother Mason got along pretty well. Mason, coming from this good family, showed signs early on that he was going to be a little bit of a troublemaker because at around age 12, he started getting in trouble with the law very close to the time of the incident that we'll be getting into soon. He was serving time in jail. That was for theft, right? From a bank?
Yeah, he was really into stealing things. He would steal cars and he would take them for joyrides. But oddly enough, he would fill them up with gas, even sometimes wash them or clean them up, and try to park them where he stole them from. So he wanted the thrill of the joyride, but not to accept any of the consequences of his actions.
As I said, he served some time in jail. He was released on December 25th, 1997. His parents obviously were disappointed. I would say they didn't know how to deal with him. Would that be accurate?
Oh, yeah. He was just a chaotic kid. He had a long rap sheet from age 12. What do you do with that besides let the system deal with him because they're apparently not capable of it?
Well, let's get to the incident because as you set up early on, something tears this family apart. From what we know about the family, they were pretty close, they were happy, and there weren't really any issues between any of the family members. But does that bear out?
Well, and we wouldn't be talking about it if it all worked out, right?
Right. January 6, 1998, Chatham, Ontario, around 5:15 p.m., the parents arrive home.
Brian was having his car worked on so Leslie picked him up and was driving him home. The house was dark, and they enter the front door, and they call out to their kids, "Hey, Mason, where you at?" And neither Mason or Jennifer respond. So they walk through the house. Leslie starts walking downstairs into the basement, and she looks off to the side, and she sees a body, and she sees blood. She knows enough that she walks back upstairs and has her husband go downstairs while she calls 911. And she says, "There's a body in the basement. We need help. There's blood." She's on the basement floor. There's no life there at all. The 911 dispatcher essentially has Brian pick up the phone. He's telling them that she's a white color and she's not breathing, but he goes along with life-saving techniques that the dispatcher is giving him. It's too late, and they both sound very distraught.
Their daughter, Jennifer, had been shot 5 times with a rifle. 3 of those shots were to her head, 2 were to her chest, and it appeared as though the body had been dragged from the family room that was upstairs in the house to the basement, probably to what, to conceal it? Because, why move it?
Yeah, exactly.
So this would be so when someone arrived home, they wouldn't notice a body right away.
Yeah, they wouldn't notice anything was astray or out of place.
But according to the parents, when they got home, no one answered their calls. Even after they discovered their daughter's body, they couldn't find their son. He was gone. He was missing.
Before the parents got home, they had called and Mason had picked up. They said that he sounded natural. He sounded normal. They said, "We're coming home. I picked up your dad. We are coming home." But Mason is nowhere to be found at this time. And so they think that he's been murdered or he's been victimized also. The police are looking for him. Nobody can find him. But then he's seen across town on horseback. The police will say he fled the scene. Mason will say, "No, I just didn't know how to deal with the situation. And being on a horse isn't exactly incognito, so I wasn't fleeing." But he will have a standoff with the police, take off on his horse, end up, I guess, stealing a car or some sort of vehicle, and not being apprehended until an hour later. I think the police saying he fled the scene is more accurate when you're kind of not cooperating or coming to the police.
Many people would say that those are the actions of a guilty person, right?
It doesn't look good right off the bat. And so they bring the parents and Mason in for questioning. Now, it's not till the next day that they bring Mason in for questioning because it took them so long to apprehend him.
Yeah, the parents were at the station within, 2 hours?
Exactly.
It does seem suspicious, but when they talk to Mason, he gives them a story.
Yeah, he says 4 men pulled up in a van. 2 of them had weapons, 2 did not. They entered the home. Mason says that he actually shot at them, but missed. And since he has a single-shot rifle, he couldn't do a follow-up. So they kidnap him. And while they're kidnapping him, 2 of those men are still inside the home, and they're the ones that kill Jennifer. Mason somehow manages to escape. The detectives are looking at him like, "Okay, well, we know your sister's been shot multiple times. We know you ran from the scene. And you're talking about how you shot at these assailants in a white van that nobody saw except you. And there's no bullet hole in the house that we can find. Maybe you're not being as forthcoming with us as you should be." Meanwhile, they're drilling the parents. And the parents cannot fathom their son doing any harm to them, their daughter, anyone in the family. And they're not exactly willing to say anything incriminating about their son, but they are there to help the investigation, help the case. So they're kind of in this crossroads here. You can see them get very frustrated with the investigators who are just doing their job, but at the same time, they're honing in on Mason right off the bat, and the parents are saying he wouldn't have done this.
Well, we sometimes complain that investigators get tunnel vision. They find a possible suspect, or even in their minds, a likely suspect, and then they kind of just focus on that person. In this case, I know there aren't a lot of details, but it's pretty simple. Mason and his sister Jennifer were at home. Jennifer shot. Mason disappears. And when he's located, he flees.
And this all happened between 4:30 and 5:10.
I have no problems with the way the police handled this because they're following the evidence and they're following their instincts. And right now, seems like they're working.
Yeah, they're following the lead, which is pointing to Mason. And this is just a little aside thing I want to bring up, but when the father tries to explain what happened that night, I found that his statements were inconsistent and sounded almost contrived. He refused to allow the police to clean the crime scene, which would have allowed them to collect even more evidence, really. And he would go through breakdowns with the police, start crying, and then he would be somewhat combative. And this really goes to show that people respond to tragedy in different ways, and it's person to person. Now, let me emphasize, the father is not a suspect. He was not in on this. He had nothing to do with this murder. But it was just my own simple observation that he didn't come off well during these police interviews.
Right. And I mean, maybe in some police stations across Canada, maybe they would have looked at him a little more closely, like, what have you got to hide? Why are you giving us inconsistencies? And why are you breaking down and getting so dramatic?
Exactly. His daughter was just murdered. So obviously they have Mason in there for questioning, and he totally denies killing his sister. And he even asks for a lawyer. After he's talked to a lawyer, he says, my lawyer told me to keep my mouth shut. But the police would come back, you know, kind of do the good cop, bad cop and say, hey, we just talked to your parents. Now they're doing this or they're saying that. Would you like to modify your statement? So it would put it more in line with theirs. As soon as Mason would try to address that, it would reopening the line of questioning and the interrogation. Let's just say that Mason's not the brightest. He had a lawyer. He had everything. But he would keep talking. We tell you all the time, like, cops can lie to you. I mean, did they talk to their parents and they changed their statement? No. They just wanted to keep Mason talking, and he obliged.
There wasn't a trial. It's sort of like they tried to get a trial started. The first one broke down because Mason's attorney was removed because of a conflict of interest. And the first one was supposed to start in 1999. That one fell apart. In the year 2000, the spring, the second trial was supposed to start, but Mason fired his attorney. So they had to postpone. The third trial, October 4th, 2000, was expected to last 10 weeks. Witnesses were not allowed to attend the trial, including the parents, Brian and Leslie. This is kind of a big deal because they're witnesses, but they want to watch the trial. They want to be there because they want answers. But according to the court system, they can't because they're witnesses, so they need to be kept out of the courtroom when they're not getting testimony.
Sequestered so they're not tainted or influenced by the actual things being seen in the trial, which is sort of interesting.
I think that makes sense. I agree with it, but I also feel terrible for Brian and Leslie because this trial is about their lives, about their tragedy, and now they can't actually participate in it and learn things. They have to be sequestered away, and then once in a while they can give some testimony, but they're not getting the answers they want. It must be like torture for them.
Yeah. So you can imagine these parents who can never accept that their son would have done anything to their daughter. They feel that the police interrogators were very aggressive and combative with them, and now they're being told that they can't even be at the trial.
except for when they're called to the stand, they're being pushed aside, or at least that's how they feel.
When it comes down to this trial, the Crown or prosecution has a pretty solid case. They have a case involving the rifle that was used in the crime, some forged wills, and obviously timeline. Really, it comes down to motive, which the wills answer the motive. Let's go through this.
The wills were made all out so Mason would be the sole inheritor, right? But in order for him to get the estate, inherit all the stuff, he can't have a sister around and his parents got to die. So what the Crown is proposing is that he murdered his sister, dragged her body downstairs, was waiting for his mother to come home so he could shoot her, and then he would drag her downstairs, then he was going to wait for his father to come home and shoot him. Now, he fulfilled the first part of his plan where he shot his sister, drug her downstairs, left her body there, but then the second half of his plan got screwed up because his father's car was in the shop, so mom went and picked him up, and they came home together, and he has a single-shot rifle, so he couldn't take them both out simultaneously.
It became a much riskier venture to attack his parents if they were together.
So he aborted the whole mission, jumped on a horse, and took off.
See, you already said he doesn't seem like a bright guy. I don't think he's capable of higher thinking here. You know, you need to have a backup plan. He didn't have one. It's literally, here's my plan. Oh, wait, it's out the window. I guess I better run for it. It's a poor plan.
Yeah.
Now, we're speaking as if he did it, but he did it. I mean, this is not a mystery. This is not really the kind of case that we picked because it's a mystery. But we'll get to why we wanted to cover this case.
The defense maintains that four men broke into the house and killed Jennifer. On November 21st, they have Mason take the stand, which probably a bad idea. I normally think that, yeah, go up there, defend yourself. But with Mason, not so much. He admitted that he lied about being kidnapped by four men. But he still says that those men broke into the house and were responsible for the murder. On November 24th, he was partway through his testimony when his attorney, Clay Powell, requested an adjournment based on the matter that had come up during cross-examination, and that would delay the trial until the 27th.
It was at that point that Attorney Norman Peel appeared. He was going to request that Powell be allowed to withdraw his counsel. And so I think they're trying to say, you know, everything can keep going on, but I'm going to be the counsel from now on. He said that concealing information he had received while under solicitor-client confidentiality would result in a deception of the court. Powell was allowed to withdraw, and he was replaced by another attorney. The trial moved forward, but I wonder if it was allowed to move forward just because they had other trials fall apart. We can keep canceling the trial, but why? Let's just move on.
Yeah, it's been years now. Just because we hit this one speed bump, we think we can still continue without causing such a huge ordeal to cause a mistrial, essentially.
But didn't Mason shoot himself in the foot here? They always say you need to listen to your attorney. The attorney will present a case to the court. The case that was put forward was undermined by Mason's own testimony. And now he's saying, oh, I was never kidnapped. And so when you start to change the story, now people are like, really? What else do you want to change now? And I think he lost the court at that point.
Well, he should have shot himself in the foot because his story would have been more believable of the four men, but whatever.
We already said he's guilty, right? January 12, 2001, Mason Jenkins is convicted of first-degree murder, sentenced to life in prison, but of course, he's in Canada. He will be eligible for parole after 25 years.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
His parents want to visit him in prison, and the prison system refuses. They say that Mason could be a danger to them, or because he murdered the daughter, the parents might be seeking revenge against Mason. So they do not allow them to visit for a very long time, and it takes tons of paperwork and whatnot for the parents to finally get access to Mason. And when they do, though, it's kind of cool because they have like a private house that they go to so the whole family can hang out together, and it's somewhat normality, I guess, a normalcy of a family. This house has, you know, a kitchen with knives and all kinds of stuff, but the guards have to call multiple times a day, and everyone in the household has to come to the front and come out into the front yard so they can be seen and counted. And the guards will make sure that nobody's killing each other, essentially. So it's sort of an interesting situation. You got to understand that this was huge news. The family's torn apart because a lot of the family's like, well, we support Brian and Leslie. And Brian and Leslie support their son. What do you do there?
It's a tricky situation. I think it was a statement such as, we couldn't just throw him away. Do you know what I mean? So they lost their daughter. It was their son who was responsible for the killing, even though for many years he denies it. It's like they know, but they can't just get rid of their son. They love their son.
They've lost their daughter. This is all they have left.
But this riles up the community. There are many people who say, that disgusts me. How could they love someone who killed their daughter? Whether it's their son or not, they said it makes no sense. And so it's one of those things where forgiveness, which doesn't seem to be a common thing for many people, but when it does come up, there are people who will always question it. Why would you forgive someone for doing X?
Yeah, and I get the outrage, but are you in the family? Are you in that community? Are you impacted by this at all? Why do you require your pound of flesh? Why do you feel entitled to how somebody else will respond to a situation?
So Brian and Leslie are being judged in the public, and many don't have very nice things to say to them, whether it's in the news or in person when they pass them on the sidewalk.
I feel for the parents. You know, they can do whatever they want. If they do not wish to accept their son's actions, if it's easier for them to think that this was somehow an accident, whatever works for them. By the way, Mason does come clean eventually and admit to his parents and publicly that he murdered his sister.
It takes years, and it's not until his appeals dry up that he comes clean, and he doesn't even come clean all the way. He comes clean enough where it's not a mystery. What are some of the stories he was telling over time?
He told the stories about the four men and then, you know, shooting at them, being kidnapped, and then it went to there was four men and he just left or something, and then the four men weren't there, and it turned into the gun was by a coat rack and he went to grab it and it went off and he accidentally shot his sister, but she was shot five times. Then it changes to, well, I shot her and then she was suffering, so I had to finish the job, not call 911, not call for help. And you have to realize that this is a single shot 22 rifle. You load one cartridge into the breech and you cock it and you fire it. Bam. Then you have to open the breech, pull that shell out, put in a fresh shell, close the breech, cock the rifle again. Bam. Do that five times. And when you think about he grabbed the gun and it accidentally went off and shot his sister, just think about the ballistics of that. She was shot three times in the side of the head, twice in the chest. Which one was the accidental shot? His stories never really make sense. When I thought about him stealing cars as a kid and then trying to return them to not accept any responsibility, I think we're looking at a person who hasn't grown up at all and is still not accepting the responsibility of the murder of his sister.
John Kastner makes documentaries, and he found out about this case and felt he had to cover it.
It was called Life with Murder. I watched it on Amazon. I'm not getting paid for that. It's well done. You will probably feel more for the parents because it's very much in their favor. But at the same time, you do get the other side, which is this guy's a menace. He had a good relationship with his family. He had a good relationship with his sister. And while she's sitting there eating snacks and popcorn, watching soap operas, he walked up and shot her in the head. What kind of person does that and doesn't feel a thing about it?
And this is the same person who forged wills to get property and money.
We've covered a few cases where people plan to wipe out their whole family so they can get the inheritance.
These are the kind of things that we can never really understand. Like his mother said at one point, she said, I'm hopeful that one day he'll tell us the whole story. But no one really believes he will. Even Mason has said, I've told so many lies that I feel like I can't even tell anyone the truth anymore. And furthermore, he's afraid of what that would mean to his parents and their relationship with him.
And he's probably afraid that if he actually told the truth, he would have to face his own actions. I mean, he's had to face the consequences, going to trial, going to prison, but has he really faced them? I personally don't really care if a criminal admits to their guilt. I don't really care if they do show remorse, because I think that can be faked. People always want to say, well, you know, you get paroled, you got to admit your guilt and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, well, anyone can say anything, right?
Yeah, that happened not that long ago in the Whitman case.
Yeah. In this situation, Mason is up for parole in 2023. His father, Brian, has since passed away. He was such a kind and caring person, but he was a disaster after that. You could see and hear the trauma pouring out of him. You could see the constant mood swings and changes. It was really sad to watch this man just spiral.
And didn't he lose about 100 pounds?
Yeah. He's unrecognizable from the old pictures to the documentary. I didn't realize it was the same man when I was watching the documentary. I was like, oh, wait, man, like that's the father.
The other thing that we learned, though, with this documentary, and I realize documentaries can be biased or maybe they focus only on certain things, so you're not really seeing the full picture. But I feel as though Mason is displayed in his true form, which is he has no remorse.
He really doesn't. He's edited, but...
They didn't edit out his remorse.
No. No. He's in his natural form. Now, you know, given they show him and his dad like barbecuing or something, and his dad's talking to him about how his mom has a sweet tooth and stuff like that, you get that sort of family bond going. But for the most part, you don't really feel for him. You don't feel sorry for him.
But is this lack of remorse over murdering his sister, is that like a disconnect he has where he's not willing to accept what he did? Or is he just really that cold? Obviously, this is just opinion here.
I think it's a total disconnect. I think he's a common criminal, but he can lie to himself. This is another reason why I don't like polygraph tests, because you lie to yourself long enough, you can convince yourself of anything.
And so you can pass a polygraph.
Absolutely. I think he would pass a polygraph.
So this documentary came out in 2010. Do you feel like people hear this case on our show? Do you feel like this is something they should watch just so they can get the visuals, so they can see this family spending time together?
Yeah, I mean, much like any of the documentaries that have come out in the last decade, I think they're all very well done. You can say they're biased one way or another, but they're pretty open about him admitting to the murder and everything. So this isn't exactly a biased documentary for or against a guilty man. It's more or less trying to get you to feel for the family.
But does it work? Because even to this day, there are people who are incensed by the fact that these parents would want to spend time with their murderer son.
I get that. And they even are afraid for Leslie, the mother, if he gets paroled. They're afraid for the family because they think, well, maybe he'll continue on with his plan. Maybe he hasn't learned anything because he obviously hasn't admitted fully to the murder. He hasn't told about his actions. Here's where I would come in and say, well, how stupid can you be if you got out of prison and then murdered your mom for an inheritance? That was your original plan, right?
So you might argue, meaning anyone, that Mason wouldn't murder anyone now because, well, the game's up.
Yeah, the gig is up. We figured you out. As we said, he's kind of dumb. And I don't mean that any sort of way. I just mean that he probably hasn't matured at all. I don't know if this guy's learned a lesson. I don't know what he's thinking. He liked his family, but he was still planning to wipe them out. And he did it in a dumbass manner. I mean, you can't say you shot at assailants and then there not be any evidence of that. You can't make up this whole stupid lie that just shows how stupid he is. And so is he smart enough to know that he can't continue with his mission after he gets out? He hasn't shown me that he's smart enough. So that's what I mean when I say he's dumb.
Right. I mean, not to start a whole other thing, but one of the things we got to talking about in the Avery case was, why would a guy risk $36 million or whatever it was to attack and murder a woman? Well, some people are that dumb.
Yeah.
They don't think about, oh, I might get caught, or this might cost me my money. If you think about it, you can think about why you wouldn't do those things, but that's why you're not in prison right now, because you didn't do those things.
We understand the consequences. We understand how you could easily be caught. It's the law of the land that keeps the order, and it keeps good people or opportunists from committing crimes.
In early 2014, Mason wanted to use something known as the Faint Hope Clause so that he could get out on early parole. Now, remember, it was supposed to be 25 years before any chance of parole, but there was this faint hope clause. In 2011, that clause was amended, so it was more restrictive. Mason's attorney was saying, hey, that old clause should apply because Mason's crime and his conviction occurred when it was still in effect. So what do you think here? Before we say what happened, do you think that it should apply because it was amended later after his crime and conviction?
I think it should have applied if he qualified for it. Let me qualify what I'm saying here. I think it applied because it was when they applied for it, but that's only if he qualified, which who knows if he met the threshold of early release.
So you think let him apply, but probably not let him get out early?
Yeah, and again, I'm not on a parole board. I don't want to say, oh, I wouldn't let him out or I would let him out. I let the system do that. And then we analyze what the system's decision was and how they came up with it. I personally don't know if they should, because he seems to have not accepted any responsibility. But again, I don't put a lot of weight for the people that say they have.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Well, a justice ruled against him twice. She ruled that they would be using the new amended rules in regards to his case regarding early parole, which was you're not going to get to. She also said that his plea could not be decided by a jury. She was saying she doesn't see how anyone from the jury that convicted him would have wanted him to get out early.
No, I agree with her there. And even if they allowed him to apply, it looks like he should have been denied.
But it also looks like this year in 2019 that he may be able to apply for early release again. I don't know if it's seen as an issue of fairness. Like, we kind of get what you're saying about the amended rule, but we don't really want you out right now, so we'll kind of, you know, hit snooze on that alarm clock.
It's a compromise, essentially, for the system, sort of screwing him over, but not totally denying him the early release.
So he had a couple of relatives pass away. One was his grandmother. That was, what, in 2013? But at that funeral, he was allowed to attend. But they had him in handcuffs, there were armed guards, and so here's this inmate being led around. In 2016, his father Brian passed away, and they handled it completely differently. I think they learned a lesson from the other funeral, which is, let's not make this a media circus. We'll literally have a garage door go up, and the vehicle he's in go into the garage, the door will close, and then he'll get out, but no one will be there to photograph it.
Yeah, they're going to treat him like a human, and they're going to not bring more attention to it all.
There's something really interesting in this whole case. Like, you know, we don't cover Canadian cases very often, but it seems like they're letting the family spend time together in real ways, and he's being allowed to grieve where most people would want to. He's allowed to attend a funeral. He's allowed to be a part of the whole process when it seems like anywhere else that would be questioned. Is this all part of that hope that maybe he can be placed back into society? I mean, there have been statements like, maybe if we let him do this work program, he can have employability sometime.
Yeah, it's the whole process of rehabilitation and getting him reintegrated in society. And I hope it works. I hope he figures it out.
So let me ask you this. We hope he figures it out. You've expressed a lot of doubt about whether he could ever mature enough and come to grips with what he's done. And because of that, be able to seek real forgiveness. I mean, just because his parents communicated with him and supported him and said they forgave him, they didn't do it after being told the whole story. So what do you think needs to happen? Because as far as we can tell, he's probably not going to get released until 2023 at the earliest.
I think if he gets released in 2023, that's fine. I would hope that he accepts his actions. I would hope that he shows some sort of remorse, but I don't think that's going to happen. Is it required? Not really. when it comes to if he's going to reoffend or not. You know, before he went to prison, before he murdered his sister, he was a criminal. Then he gets put in prison. He was actually a pretty good inmate. Like, he had zero or very few incidents while in prison. I think they found that he had THC in his system once. So one time he was intoxicated in 20 something years he's in there. With prison, I'm giving an opinion that has been told to me. This is not me saying this, but a lot of prisoners say time is at a standstill. You have nothing. You don't have any progress when you're in prison. You're not maturing unless you are taking advantage of the educational system, taking advantage of all their programs. You're in a dead zone. So did he mature? Did he progress while he was in prison? And the way he talks, it doesn't sound like it.
And see, I think this only reinforces the public's perception of the case, which is this young man at age 20 killed his 18-year-old sister and feels no remorse about it. Now, whether he's lying to himself or just doesn't want to talk about it, he did this. And then his parents forgave him and spent time with him, continued to love on him. There are pictures you can find online, but people are outraged by this because they feel like he's getting away with it. He's incarcerated. They're holding him in prison. They feel like he's gotten away with it in a way.
I don't know if it's getting away or if it's you're releasing somebody that's still a menace to society out onto our streets. It's not really he got away with it. It's a, has he been rehabilitated? Is he a threat? Most people will look at him and be like, it kind of is. Although the system and the parole board say he's probably a low-level threat or least likely to reoffend.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, though, is early on when we started the episode, you said forgiveness overshadows the crime.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, I believe that a lot of people in the public are saying because the parents have forgiven him, there isn't that pressure for him to actually come clean. He already has the forgiveness. It's kind of like, hey, you know, sit up, boy. You know, like when you're dealing with a dog, have him do some tricks and then he gets the treat. They already gave him the treat and now he doesn't have to do any tricks. I think they feel like the parents sabotaged justice in this case. But as you said, I don't know how many times, it's not the public's pound of flesh here. It's the family that has to deal with the tragedy. It's their loss. It was their daughter. So who gets to be outraged here?
Yeah.
I guess that's the real question. I get it from a philosophical standpoint. I agree even that it seems like something more should have been done here to try and get Mason to break. But it's not really our demand that's important here, you know? So philosophically, I get it. But in practice, this family suffered enough. And if this is what they have to do to get by day to day, it's really difficult for me to demand some kind of action or speak out against them.
What did our awesome researcher say about this when she wrote up our document?
We had research assistance from Haley. She wrote this because, you know, we always ask, send us your opinion. And she said, Mason doesn't seem to deserve what wonderful parents he has. He does not seem to show remorse for what he has done and continues to lie about aspects of the case when there is no need to do so. I'm glad he's going to be in prison as long as Canadian sentencing law will allow.
I agree. His parents are awesome.
So in other words, instead of dogging on these parents, and obviously Brian has passed, but Leslie is still around. Instead of dogging on these parents, again, maybe we should show some sympathy. It's, again, not our pound of flesh.
No.
And that's why I wanted to cover this case, because forgiveness became the real story in this case where a brother murdered a sister. The forgiveness by the parents overshadowed that terrible crime. Well, let's wrap this up, Justin. If anyone in the audience has anything they want to say on this case, feel free to tweet at us at GenYPod on Twitter, or hit up our Facebook page, Generation Y Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.